Coming up today, Apple reveals its new iPhones, one of which replaces the iPhone 5 and one that's an entirely new model, sort of. We were at Apple's event to get hands-on and to bring you our opinions. Plus, a Bristol-based roboticist has developed a robotic prosthetic hand using a 3D-printed component, or several of them in fact, that costs as little as £650. And thanks to NASA, this week we get to use the term space spider for the first time on the show. All that plus your comments and feedback and a brand new voice coming up over the next 30 minutes. This is the Wired.co.uk podcast, your weekly guide to the important and interesting from science and tech to cheese, theatre and mammalian cybernetics. I'm your host, Nate Langson, and I'm the editor of Wired.co.uk.
And I'm Olivia _ Solon.
And you're about to hear a brand new voice. It belongs to a guy called Nicholas. Here it comes.
And I'm Nicholas Tufnell.
There you go. Now, Nicholas has joined us. He's our new online assistant, intern extraordinaire. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. It's a delight to be here.
Yeah, a past listener of the show graduates to be a co-host on the show. That's not bad. It's not bad.
It's perfect. It's perfect.
Yeah, so we're going to be hearing a lot from you over the next few months, I imagine. Now, Mrs. Liat Clark is back.
Well, I don't think she's Mrs. Liat Clark. Mrs. Liat Gregory now.
Well, that was a device I was using to say she's married now.
Right.
You know.
And awkward.
She's back. She's back next week. So I'm looking forward to having her voice ringing in our ears. But this week, first things first, news. I just got back from an Apple event overseas about 2 hours ago.
Yes, it was hard to miss.
It was. Apple announced iPhones, two of them, an iPhone 5S and a 5C. And a bunch of other stuff. And we're going to come back to this actually in more detail later on in the show. In the second half, our discussion segment. I imagine we'll headline that with Riding the Technosaurus.
I really hope so.
God, I hope so. But in short, two new iPhones were announced. The 5S replaces the iPhone 5. It's an updated model. It looks exactly the same, with the exception of the fact that it has a new home button. That's the button below the screen, for those of you who do not know. And it has a fingerprint sensor in it. Instead of using a passcode to unlock the device, you simply place your finger on the button and the phone magically unlocks itself as it recognizes your fingerish print. It also has a new camera and it's about twice as fast. The iPhone 5C is a slightly more affordable, relatively speaking, much more colorful plastic cased iPhone that effectively replaces the 5 in that basically all the components on the inside of the 5C are the same as the 5, but it's only about £80 cheaper than the 5S. So that's a discussion we will enjoy returning to in about 20 minutes. And also iOS 7, which is the new operating system for the iPhone, and frankly looks nothing like the past one, at least in terms of color schemes and aesthetics. That's going to be released on the 18th of September, while the phones themselves come out on the 20th. So interesting news there. I think you'll agree. Yes.
Indeed.
Yeah, Nicholas.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yes. Well, it's going to get more interesting when we debate into our opinions, because I just had an entire evening fondling them with my hands and fingers. And I have opinions that are ready to burst from my mouth.
I'm surprised you didn't do the opinion juice term. You tend to use
that. That's building up. The pressure inside of that juice, Liv.
You'll have to squeeze that one out.
It's going to get squozen with quite an amount of force. But that's coming up. The Open Hand Project, Liv. This fascinated me. I was reading about this while I was away.
Do you need a robotic hand?
Well, it wouldn't help me unlock the new iPhone, so I'm going to say no.
Okay. Well, this is a really cool project from a Bristol-based roboticist, as you mentioned in the intro, called Joel Gibbard. And what he's done is he's developed this robotic prosthetic hand using rapid prototyping techniques to make it reasonably affordable for people in the developing world is the intention. So it can cost about £650.
Now that's a lot less than existing.
Yeah, it sounds like quite a lot of money. But if you think about the existing prosthetic hands, and now these are the ones that kind of you can attach to the bit of the arm that you have remaining, and they pick up on electrical signals in your skin to then allow you to move a hand. They normally cost anywhere between £25,000 and £80,000. So £650 is actually pretty good.
It is if the performance is comparable and the benefits to an amputee is significant.
Yeah, exactly. And so he first developed it as part of his final year project while studying at the University of Plymouth. But after uni, he kind of left that behind, got a job for 2 years, but always had this sort of niggling feeling that he should be going back to this project and actually making it happen. So in March this year, he quit and he launched the Open Hand Project. And another good thing about this project is that it's open source. And he uses lots of off-the-shelf technology to create these hands that use kind of plastic for the bone, and they have a kind of rubber coating for the sort of skin, and they have these steel tendons which can be controlled by amputees.
Now, the thing I find amazing about this is that he's already got a subject who has tested this and was impressed enough. His job is as a chef, and he was able to peel potatoes again, which is a fantastic first result.
Yeah, the chef called Liam Corbett contacted Joel over Facebook once he heard about the project and said, I'd really like to try this out. And so there's a video on the Indiegogo page that Gibbard's using to try and raise money to put this into development. And Liam's wearing the hand, and he says that he's been really, really impressed with the technology, and that, you know, most people think that peeling potatoes is a, you know, not an exciting activity. But for him, having not been able to do it for a long time, it really is. And he's been using a hook up until this point and could never afford one of these bionic hands.
Yeah. Well, we've got a full write-up on the site, as always. Search for Open Hand. You will discover it.
Indeed.
Nicholas.
Yes.
It's time for me to slightly rotate my face to stare directly into yours. Now, this week we had a great story in the site about something that we headlined, NASA-backed space spider concept to build giant satellites in orbit. There isn't a single word in that isn't interesting.
I know. It's fascinating. It's if you don't find this fascinating, there's something wrong with you.
I agree.
A company in US called Tethers Unlimited was recently awarded about £320,000 by NASA to change the way satellites are built in space. In their own words, they want to launch the process, not the product. So the product really is SpiderFab, a potentially revolutionary idea that constructs satellites in orbit.
Now, I guess this gets around the problem that it's actually very expensive to launch a fully fledged pre-built satellite and fire it up into space. Is actually a lot more convenient to send bits up and assemble it up there.
Exactly. And what you end up doing is actually just launching up the raw materials and not having to worry so much about the satellites. So once it's up there, it can then use 3D printing that can build large-scale space structures, potentially unlike anything we've seen before.
I love how casually we're talking about this. So obviously, once we shove this spider robot up into space, that's the point where it can just use 3D printing and create enormous structures. That's amazing.
Exactly. It's really quite remarkable. So once it's in orbit, this is the part that is actually really fascinating to me. Once it's in orbit, a spider-like robot with the ability to extrude long beams, rather like how a real spider spins silk, can then join together large structures with 3D printed joining components.
There is nothing...
That is amazing.
Yeah, there is nothing not amazing about that.
No. It's
the mental
just
image alone is just tremendous.
Yeah. So there are, of course, some challenges to this. So the main challenge is heat and the lack of air in space. So unlike on Earth, heat generated during the manufacturing process isn't conducted away. So it's going to get very hot. Additionally, places in direct sunlight can be hundreds of degrees Celsius hotter than in shade, which can sort of make large differences in temperature that can interfere with the materials.
Now, I'm guessing that have they tested this yet? They're planning on testing it, right?
Yeah, they're planning on testing it in about, I think they were hoping for a 2020 time period. About 2020, they're going to get something up there. But that seems very hopeful to me.
And I suppose if this is actually successful, then it'll just end up working on bigger versions.
Well, if this is successful, you could start off having huge mirrors, huge frame-like structures. But then that could go off that you could then eventually you could end up creating huge cruisers. And amazing spaceships, and then they could be used to mine certain things within space. You could even mine the moon.
Where does the material that it's using to print these structures come from?
Voodoo.
Right, that settles it then.
I don't know, actually. I think it must have a stock on board, or at the very least is connected to a nearby craft, you know, something like the ISS, that can feed it in the same way that it can feed, good choice
feed
of words,
the space bodies.
But in the same way that oxygen is piped to astronauts who do spacewalks,
yes,
or can be. I'm guessing it's not dissimilar
okay.
to that.
Yeah, the raw materials would actually be shot up into space.
Okay.
Alongside it.
Yeah, which is actually a hell of a lot easier than sending a very complicated satellite up into space,
yeah.
which then has to very delicately unfold. The spider can do it.
Great.
Well, I, for one, welcome our space arachnids overlords. Let's move on to talk about Cheese Live. Now, a pedal-powered play about money.
Yes.
Is happening, apparently.
Yeah,
and
now,
it's called Cheese.
I've written about a lot of weird things
you have.
At Wired.
You have.
But I think this is one of the weirdest ones.
It is.
It's actually a pedal-powered play called Cheese, as you said, by a theatre company called Fanshen. And it's meant to be an allegorical take on the global financial crisis, which centres around a couple that lives in one of the holes in a giant Emmental cheese. Now, in this play, in case you hadn't worked out, cheese is actually used as a kind of metaphor for money.
I had not worked that out.
And so one day, the couple wakes up and all the cheese has run out. They don't get their daily cheese delivery. And so this is an absurd story. And this is something that I spoke to the director of the play, Rachel Briscoe, and she readily admits that it's very absurd. But the interesting thing about it is that, well, in addition to the fact that it's a play about cheese that talks about the financial crisis, is the fact that the whole energy for the whole of the play, for all the lights and the sound, is generated by some static bicycles that they've installed into gyms around London. So they put them in gyms, people pedal away, charge up these batteries, and then every day the director is actually going to go and pick them up on her bike and bring them into the location in Oxford Street in London and use that to power all of the lights of the play.
Wow.
So
that's e-damn impressive.
So, yeah, the idea is a kind of comment on sustainability. Within the play, there is one of the characters, you know, realise what's gone wrong with the system and heads off to live a more sustainable lifestyle. So I guess that's the link with the trying to use this pedal-powered energy to power the play. But one of my favourite things about this is a scene where one of the characters, this man called Joe, he's trying to work out what went wrong in the system. And he goes into another cheese hole in the giant Edam in which he lives. And he comes across a factory. And in there, there's a man whose job it is to create Dairy Lee style triangles. Now, making these requires taking small amounts of the good cheese, the good money, and large amounts of toxic cheese, the sort of securitized debt that got us into all the problems in the global financial crisis. But once it's all packaged up into the shiny little triangles, there's no way of knowing what was in there in the first place. And so I love that. You're looking at me like I'm completely crazy.
I'm just trying to think how much farther you could extend the metaphor of cheese equals money in terms of things like, you know, being invested and it becomes like a really crumbly sort of vintage cheddar that actually doesn't represent any real value because it's crumbled too much.
Oh, okay.
You know.
I was trying hard to think of cheese puns, but I'm going to fail and just leave it for you guys, listeners, to think of them. If you do think of them, email us at podcast@wired.co.uk. But if you want to go and see the play, it's on until the end of September. It's in Oxford Street in London. Look for Fanshen on our website, and you'll be pleased to know that the bar there will be serving Baby Bell cheese.
As well as booze.
Yes.
You know, I went through a phase where I used to think it was really cool to eat Baby Bell in school. And even though I really hated it, kept doing it.
I once used a baby bell instead of the red nose on Red Nose Day, kind of missing the point of raising money for comic relief.
Interesting. I can see you doing that.
Yeah.
What's the weirdest thing you've ever done with cheese, Nicholas?
Well, I've not really done anything particularly weird with cheese, but I do have a cheese joke, which I've been trying to get in, but there's just been no space.
No.
What cheese do you live in?
I don't know.
Cottage cheese.
That would be made more fun if I didn't live in a flat in West London.
Yeah.
My mum lives in a cottage.
Yeah.
Very good. I look forward to future jokes from you, Nicholas. You can read more, obviously, though, about that story. And Liv, I think you're personally fascinated by this. So you should go along and review it.
I'm going
to
go along.
I think you really do need to go along and review that. And we'll look forward to that review on a future programme. We're going to pedal into a quick break. But when we come back, we are going to well and truly get our apple on. It's that time again. You know what's coming up. Audiobook time, promotion time, audible.co.uk plugging time, because Audible is offering you, the listener of this here podcast, one of 80,000 audiobook downloads for being a listener. A 1 month free trial costs no pounds, no pence in whatever currency you're choosing, and the book you choose to download is yours to keep even if you cancel your account. So there's really no drawbacks. Go to audible.co.uk/wired. It's quite short. Sign up in a few seconds and download that book. You'll be supporting our show here every week and our cheese jokes, and you get a free book as a thank you. There's very little not to like. Do it now. audible.co.uk/wired. Okay, we are back, and it is time to talk about iDevices. I have been over to Apple's event to see, and we're going to headline this with Riding the Technosaurus. There's that killer music that we all live and love for, or live for and love, or love and live. I don't know where I'm going with this. But yes, this is the part of the show. We're going to talk about the new iPhones, what Apple has announced, also what Apple hasn't announced. Now, Liv, I'm going to ask you. No, I'm not going to ask Nicholas because he said slightly fewer words so far on the show. Of all the things that Apple announced yesterday, which one do you want to hear about first? Bearing in mind that I've used them all.
I'm really interested in hearing about the biometrics.
Okay, so that is the 5S, a good choice. The flagship of yesterday's announcements. Yes, so the iPhone 5S was announced. This is Apple's new flagship iPhone. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, and as Nicholas just kindly reminded everyone of, it has a fingerprint sensor in the home button. Mm. Now, this is a really interesting new approach to security, because anyone who's used an iPhone, or to be honest, I suppose any smartphone, is probably used to tapping in a password, or, you know, 1234 or any combination of four digits, sometimes an Android drawing a shape on the screen as well. And this fingerprint sensor gets rid of the need to do that. And about half the people who have iPhones apparently don't even bother setting passwords, which frankly is baffling to me given what you can do with a stolen iPhone. But there you go. And trying it out, it works really well.
Yeah. So what was the experience like of using it?
The experience is... Well, I did two experiences. So I went through the setup process first, which is in the settings menu, and it just prompts you to place your finger on the home screen. Mm. And on the display, on the phone's screen, there's kind of like a black and white, large black and white image of a fingerprint. And when you first put your finger on the sensor, bits of the lines on the fingerprint sort of expand red. And then it says, press again. And you sort of hold it against the display again.
Okay.
And bits more fill up. And you do that about four or five times. And eventually it's sort of built up this entire image of your fingerprint. And then it suggests that you put your finger on the button from different angles so it can just see some of the sort of edge details, if you like, of your given digit.
Yeah.
And then after that, it really is a case of just pressing the home button with that finger and the phone just unlocks.
Okay.
But if you do it with a different finger, the phone does not unlock.
Now, I have a slight problem with this. I think that this would be more secure if you had some kind of double authentication. If you had the biometrics as well as putting in some code or doing a drawing, why not? It's already there. Why get rid of it?
Two reasons. The most important one is simply time. This gets rid of any need to remember a password or to have to remember a code. And apparently half of all iPhone users are inherently idle and don't give two tosses about security. So this gets around that problem by simply thinking, you're pressing this button anyway, why not make that the security?
Are we going to see a rash of people having their fingers chopped off to steal phones?
I asked, and I'm not the only one that's asked this yesterday, whether you needed a pulse for the finger to work. Because I foresee this future where phones get stolen and muggers who are a bit more technologically, you know, savvy, know that you're going to need a finger in order to unlock it. And not just stealing your phone, but also stealing your finger.
Mm.
Which finger do you unlock? And that brings me on to another point, which is that you can save up to 5 unique fingerprints to unlock the phone. So you could do, say, your thumb on either hand and your finger on either hand. Or, for example, if you had an iPhone that maybe your partner uses or your kids use, you could have their fingerprints saved as well. I think more than 5 would actually be quite beneficial in a family.
Hang on, you said iPad. I mean, it hasn't been announced for iPad yet.
No,
it?
I meant iPhone. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, so you can have multiple fingers or multiple finger owners, if you like, authenticated to use it. And it does work really well. And the other part of this is that the fingerprint authentication stuff can be used for like the iTunes store and downloading apps or in-app payments, things like that. So if the iTunes store prompts you currently to enter your password, you could now see that saying, you know, please tap your finger to authenticate. And again, it gets rid of the need of having a password. And I think that that could be very interesting if app developers get the API, the code needed to invoke that level, that type of security into their apps. You could see something like on Twitter, instead of using two-factor authentication, which we talked about in the past, where you have to get a text message come in to confirm your identity and all that sort of stuff, you could type in your password and just put your fingerprint on. Mm. Or you could just use your fingerprint without a password as well, which could be, I think, very interesting. Mm.
Okay, so apart from the security, what else can you tell us about the iPhone 5S?
Well, the main thing is that it kind of looks exactly the same, with the exception of a slightly different looking home button. Mm. The design is the same as the iPhone 5. It comes in a new gold color, which does look quite nice, but it is basically just an aesthetic difference. It weighs the same. It feels like it weighs the same. It's the same thickness, the same weight. The screen's the same size, the same resolution. It's all basically the same in the hand, so there's not a great deal to differentiate it. But iOS 7 comes on this and the 5C, which we'll come to shortly, and that is radically different from the current version of iOS. Mm. And the camera has been improved. So you can do, it can shoot video at 120 frames a second, which is great for slowing down. There were some demos of like kids jumping in pools where it was full speed as they were jumping into the water, and then as they hit the water, it slowed down and then sped up again as they were climbing out of the pool. So it's quite neat, but I do kind of worry that we're going to see this huge influx of super slow-mo videos on YouTube.
Oh, yes.
And, for the first few days, that'd be quite interesting, and I'll be certainly doing that, you know, probably filming my cat jumping from various objects to other objects. And there's definitely benefits to filming at 120 frames a second in terms of, editing and slow-mo and stuff like that. But, I suspect that might end up being more of a novelty than a practical use.
There'll be the first music video filmed on an iPhone with slow-mo.
Definitely.
Blah, blah, blah.
Definitely.
I also heard that Space Gray is replacing Slate Black.
Yes.
Which is pretty exciting. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, it's kind of like these Dulux color charts where it's something like, you know, happiness blue or, incandescent with rage red, that sort of stuff.
Sad gray,
yeah. No, it's black, it's silver, and it's gold, realistically. But Apple has some sexier names, I suppose.
Champagne.
Champagne. And the other big factor on the 5S is that the processor has been overhauled, and I won't go into sort of huge amounts of detail as to exactly what's changed. Safe to say Apple claims it's about twice as fast as the previous model in terms of raw processing power and also graphics performance. We saw a great demo of Infinity Blade 3, a new game which always tends to come out with a new iPhone model as kind of like a tech demo, sort of ultra high-end graphics, like really pushing the phone's graphical power to its maximum as kind of a showcase, and it does look fab, and Infinity Blade 2 is awesome, so I'm really excited about
that.
But
you didn't get the opportunity to fully test it?
No, it was a very brief, very, very brief hands-on. The briefest of all for Apple, I have to say, for the 5S.
Now, before this announcement, there were leaks about a budget iPhone, weren't there?
Yeah.
And we saw pictures of something called an iPhone 5C. Now, that did launch, but it's not quite as budget as we imagined.
It's not. I think... So I was talking to someone last night about this, and I think that part of the problem is that people saw the colors and they saw the plastic and just assumed that Apple going from glass and metal to color and plastic meant that it was kind of a budget model to compete with mid-range Androids. And I actually think that though that thinking got into everyone's frame of mind, and so when Apple announced that it was cheaper, but only £80 cheaper than the iPhone 5S, they sort of thought, oh, it's not a budget, or that's not much of a budget. But realistically, I don't actually think that's what it was ever intended for.
Yeah.
Apple's always had, you know, iPods and iPad covers that have been in different colors as a sort of personalization sort of thing. And realistically, that's kind of what this is. You know, effectively, this is the phone that probably a lot of people are going to buy, and the 5S will remain as kind of this sort of more flagship model for the slightly wealthier, perhaps. But again, nice. And it doesn't feel cheap just because it's plastic. It still feels very solid. It kind of does feel like a very tough plastic. You know, it doesn't feel like even the iPhone 3GS, which is the closest this thing feels to because of the polycarbonate back, definitely feel that felt less premium than this does, because it's still very weighty but not heavy, if that makes any sense. Like, it feels solid.
Not really, but
okay.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah,
I think this is also quite propitious circumstances for other manufacturers to make this mid-range phone that apparently everyone wants.
Yeah.
Mm. Not saying that there aren't mid-range phones out there, but it seems like everyone wanted one and it's not been delivered. So someone else came along.
Yeah, and you know what? The interesting thing about the 5C is that we've only seen the prices currently at the time of recording for the phone unlocked, brand new, not with a contract. So the kind where you just walk into the Apple store and say, one iPhone 5C, please.
Yeah.
It could well be that the subsidies that Apple works with carriers and networks to create are large enough to create a much bigger divide between how much the iPhone 5S costs per month on contract versus the 5C. Mm. And we won't really know that until probably over the next week or so leading up to the launch on the 20th. But that could be a factor, I think. But it's, I mean, again, it's a nice phone. And on the inside, it's basically an iPhone 5.
Yeah.
You know, the processor's the same and the memory is the same and the everything else is the same. The camera is slightly improved as well.
And they started making these cases, haven't they? So they've got the coloured outer casing of the phone, the part of the body, but then they've also launched these $29. I don't know how much they are in pounds.
I think about 25 quid, but I can't get excited about cases.
No, nor can I, but it's weird that they made such a big deal of it at the event. It's like, so you can have these two colours contrasting on your iPhone. I guess it targets the kind of Asian markets where people love customised items.
It's very true, and that's probably what the reason for the gold one, because gold phones in China are very, very popular. Mm. And that's one of the things that Apple announced actually at this event, is that the Chinese market and the massive carrier in Japan, NTT Docomo, are both getting the new iPhones on the same day as the US and the UK and various other countries, which they've never done before. So that's massive. And Apple is a huge, you know, as many technology companies have basically have their eye on China as the next massive area of growth. So that all falls into line. So those are the two phone announcements. iOS 7 release date was also shown. So that's going to be available on the 18th of September as a free download for current iPhone and iPad and iPod Touch users. So you'll be able to download that a couple of days ahead of time. And then the 5C and the 5S will both be out on the 20th. No doubt we'll have our review for then or shortly afterwards, so you can check out that. But if you want to read my write-up from the event yesterday, just search for iPhone on wide.co.uk and you'll find both of those.
But so what didn't they announce?
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, well, they didn't announce iPads, and I wasn't expecting them to announce iPads. It's rumoured that there will be another event in October that will focus on new iPads, new iPad mini with Retina display, possibly some new Macs, and certainly the release of OS X Mavericks, which is the new version of OS X. And I also expect as part of that there'll be upgrades to iCloud services as well. I think that we'll hear about a possible UK launch of iTunes Radio, which is iTunes's Spotify killer, in quotes, that's supposed to be very, very good, at least for people who've tried it so far.
It's more like a Last.fm killer, isn't it?
It's sort of a bit of both in a way. Yeah, I suppose it's closer to Last.fm than Spotify, but it's basically stream any song you want from the iTunes store for 20 quid a year. So it's pretty cool. I'm very excited about that, actually. So that's that. What do you think? Would it move you from your current iPhone, do you think?
I mean, I need a new iPhone purely because I've smashed my screen twice in the space of 3 weeks. And after painstakingly repairing it, I broke it again.
Yeah.
But I'm not massively excited. I'm not going to run out and buy it as long as mine works.
I'm tempted to downgrade to a 5C because I so hate the metal on the 5.
Mm.
Because ever since I've been using it, it's been chipping at the paint on it. It's been chipping away. Apparently that's due to the metal, and it just infuriates me. It's not so obvious on the white, but on the slate, it's really obvious.
I've heard from people who work in the sort of industry of anodizing metals that the black is an absolute pain in the ass to do. And mine too has scuffed and marked, and I've only had that about a year. And the 5C feels great, and the performance is exactly the same as the 5 currently is. So it's very, very interesting, phone. I think, though, that the last point we should probably make on this is that these announcements, specifically these two iPhone announcements, are kind of the middle stage of Apple's iPhone release schedule, because typically Apple sort of announces a big overhaul, you know, which was the 4, and then they announced the 4S, and then they announced the 5 that was completely different, and then they've announced the 5S. So this time next year, no doubt, we'll get the iPhone 6. And that's the one that is no doubt going to be a much bigger overhaul of iPhone and you know, hardware and software than perhaps this is over the previous model. So that'll be quite exciting to look out for, I think. Okay, it's time to return to a segment we have not heard from a little while. You're simply the beast. Now, this is the segment where we talk about beasts. And this week, robotic mammals. Well, sort of.
Yes.
Augmented mammals and insects live?
Cyborg slash remote controlled animals.
Now, we wanted to touch on this. It's not a news story, but it's sort of a mini feature that you put together earlier this week that we just thought was too fun not to discuss.
Yeah, well, there was some news this week, and that was about the University of Auburn has created this little doggy backpack that can remotely control a trained dog. This could be a military dog or a police dog. And the little backpack has things like a microprocessor, radio, GPS receiver, and a gyroscope and a little vibration motor. And the idea is that the controller, the dog handler, can send the dog out into a disaster zone or into a war zone. And even when the dog can no longer hear the master's voice, from without any technological aid, it can do over this kind of radio signal, the little microphone and a little speaker to offer commands at a distance.
Now, the Navy SEALs have done this for a while, I think.
Yes, they have. And there's just the University of Auburn's been kind of fine-tuning the system, improving the battery life, etc. But I thought this was a really good opportunity to think about all the ways that we've tried to kind of use animals instead of robots. I mean, often it's cheaper, instead of having to build a robot that can do a job, it's cheaper to get an animal and try and control it. They're kind of very efficient, you know, from a mechanical perspective.
Unless you're building space tarantulas, in which case it's easier to build a giant space spider
than to train
a whole group of arachnids to build a space station. All right, well, how many, we're going to run down a list of our favorite animal augmentations here. How many are we doing?
Well, I thought we'd look at three and then perhaps we can, you know, discuss some of the ethics involved, because, you know, the doggy one's quite lighthearted. It's just a little backpack he wears. But some of them are a little bit more invasive.
Like the robo roaches, I'm guessing.
Robo roaches. We've discussed this before on podcast. Liat wrote a great story and it started out as this fun little Kickstarter project, which allowed you to control a little cockroach using your iPhone. How fun, we all thought.
Yes, I did think how fun that was.
I must donate some money. And yet, Liat did a little bit of digging and found out that there was a slightly unpleasant small surgery whereby the little cockroach has his thorax sanded down and pierced, his antennae snipped off, and electrodes poked into the antennae. And that, by putting little electrical charges down where his antennae used to be, that is what guides the cockroach. Suddenly, a little bit less lol-tastic.
Yeah, you're not kidding. There's no way I want my thorax sanded.
Disgusting. Yeah. Where does it end?
Well, it doesn't end, Nicholas. Rats, the same thing we've done to rats. You know, maybe you don't have sympathy for cockroaches, but what about rodents?
Well, they don't have thorax.
They don't have thorax, but they do have thoraxes, don't we all?
They don't look
of a sort.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, they have brains, and researchers have implanted electrodes into the left and right whisker sensing regions of a rat's brain. So rats obviously, you know, feel for food and the direction using their whiskers. This bypasses the whiskers and puts electrodes straight into the brain, which, you know, the receptors for those whiskers, and then prods them in order to change the direction of the rat. And by tweaking these, the rat was made to change directions, climb trees, even jump from heights and go into the light, which rats normally don't like going into light areas. But by probing them in their brain.
It's awful. And in the cutest part, like the whisker.
I know.
The whisker
area.
That's
like
the cutest part of
the
a rat,
snaffle
surely.
Zone.
Yeah.
But the idea wasn't just kind of, you know, from making a rat toy. It was actually thinking about maybe using them to carry tiny little cameras into rubble in disaster zones.
But surely we have robots for that. We don't need to be playing around with the brains of rats.
Yeah, but rats are more able to adapt to very unpredictable terrain.
Yeah.
You know, which a robot, as good as they are, sometimes can struggle.
But rats have got little whiskers and little tails.
They are.
It does also feel like disaster zone mapping, like rubble, where buildings have collapsed, is used as an excuse for lots of kind of slightly out there innovation. But anyway, the final example I want to talk about was sharks. Now, this sounds like a Dr. Evil experiment, but it was actually the Pentagon. And they were looking at turning sharks into stealth spies that would be able to track vessels undetected. Again, brain electrodes. And it actually kind of played on a shark's very acutely tuned sense of smell. Sharks tend to navigate by following little trails of scent in the water. And so in this case, the electrodes directly stimulated the olfactory center in the shark's brain. But my favourite, slightly less invasive technique was an alternative system that they tried, which was to use small gadgets attached to the sharks' noses that released the irresistible smell of squid juice on demand in order to change the fish's direction.
That is tremendously innovative, though, you have to admit.
Yeah, so it would release a little bit over here and the shark would move its head. I move my head away from the microphone.
It's okay.
And then it would release a bit on the other side and the shark would move away.
For the benefit of the listeners, Liv just moved her head away.
Yes, I was acting as the shark. Yes. But yeah, so lots of mean ways that we're probing animals to turn them into our little remote control cars.
I suppose dolphins get out of this a little easier for being so intelligent, because there have been systems in the past where dolphins have been trained to drop bombs in various places.
And
they've been smart enough to take a bomb into a place, into a region, drop the bomb, and then leave.
Yes.
And that was done sans in electrode.
Yes, I looked into this. So I was wondering, we know so many stories about dolphins being trained. I did wonder whether they had any sort of device attached to them. But no, as you say, they just get trained. They know what to do. They get the job done. No need for little dolphin backpacks or anything.
Yeah, although probably you do have to wonder what a dolphin could do with a backpack and an electrode in its head.
Well,
I mean, if they could do that without the training,
yeah.
just think of what you could do with a dolphin.
I shudder to think about it.
I do shudder. Well, that's going to do our show for this week. I'm afraid we're out of time, so we don't have any time for feedback this week. So we'll have a double bill, bumper bill of feedback in next week's show. Do let us know what you think. Have you mutilated any insects or mammals for the benefit of humanity? If so, let us know. podcast@wired.co.uk or tweet us @WiredUK on the Twitters. Nicholas, it has been nothing short of a pleasure having you on the programme. Do you want to come back again?
I would love to come back. It's been extraordinary.
It has, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It has.
It's been great. I'll definitely be back.
Good. That's fantastic news. And Liat will be back next week. Married. Yes. I will be back. Not married, as ever. I'm still available if someone wants to marry me.
You've done this twice now,
I know.
Nate. Yeah. Inappropriate.
No, I know it's inappropriate, but yeah.
I'll marry you, Nate.
Oh, that's very kind, Nicholas.
That's all right.
Oh. Okay, well, on that slightly creepy and unplanned note, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
You've finished this week's episode of the Wired.co.uk podcast. Until next week's episode, why not download the latest issue of Wired on your iPad, Android, tablet or Kindle Fire? Do so with a discount from wired.co.uk/magazine.
I mean, Ride the Technosaurus, you must know about that porn film.